Yemen's geography makes it both strategically important and politically volatile. After months of sustained protests and intense fighting with militants, its president, Ali Abdullah Saleh, stepped down after 33 years of rule. The situation in Yemen is further complicated by a sustained U.S. involvement in the country. We're joined now by Jeremy Scahill, the national security reporter for The Nation. I'm pleased to welcome him back to our program for today's Backstory segment. Hello.
Thanks for being here.
And welcome back to the United States. When did you come back from Yemen?
I got back about 3 weeks ago.
Well, earlier this week, Yemen's Vice President Abd Rabbo Mansour Hadi came to power. Did he do it with the backing of the United States and the Gulf nations?
And with the backing of Ali Abdullah Saleh, who was the longtime U.S.-backed president. He was his vice president, so it's he was the only candidate on a ballot in their vote.
Is this similar to what happened in Egypt when we had
Mubarak
suddenly choosing his vice president and then leaving?
I mean, I'm very hesitant to compare one Arab nation's uprising to another, but there in the micro situation you're describing, yes, it is similar. It's sort of Saleh without Saleh.
Now, Hadi was elected in an uncontested election where he claimed 99% of the vote. Is that possible in a country that has so many warring factions? I always wonder why they even bother going through the motions of having an election. It's going to be 99%.
Who got the 1% of the vote there? I mean, I remember the last election Saddam had, I was in Tikrit, and he got 99.6% of the vote in the country. I shudder to think of what those 0.4% voters had happened to them.
For the past few years now, Yemen has been described as being on the brink of collapse. Do you have a sense of whether that's still the case?
The humanitarian situation there cannot be understated. It is atrocious. Yemen is going to run out of water. Unemployment is skyrocketing. The economy is in utter shambles. 33 years of corruption and stealing of international aid by the Saleh regime has just depleted the resources. And the entire country, for the most part, is addicted to this drug called khat. And all of the water in the country is basically used to grow this drug that everyone's addicted to. So, I mean, that combined with corruption, combined with the war that's going on there that people don't talk about often, is all contributing to a horrifying situation.
Is khat an opiate?
Khat is a narcotic like substance. It's in a leaf and you chew it and you get this sort of Louis Armstrong patch on the pouch on the side of your mouth. In full disclosure,
that's
Dizzy Gillespie. I chewed it the entire. I won't mess with you on the music front. I did chew it the entire time I was there because that's the only way you can get anything done as a journalist, a spy, a diplomat.
They don't trust you if you're not chewing it.
No, and U.S. diplomats are banned from chewing it. Other countries let their diplomats do it, but ours don't. So they are out of the intelligence game for the most part.
Although Saleh has left the presidency, do you think he's going to remain a major power broker?
Absolutely. I mean, there's reports that he's going to seek exile in Ethiopia or he'll go to another Gulf country. But the fact is that he remains very popular among a minority of the country and he's in full control of the security apparatus.
Because his relatives play major roles in it. You've written about his family's roles as military leaders. The Central Security Forces Counterterrorism Unit was commanded by his nephew, Yahya. Is he still in charge?
Absolutely. And although he was AWOL when I was there, he was hanging out with Che Guevara's relatives in Havana at the height of the fighting against al-Qaeda in the South a couple months ago.
So you had trouble finding him while you were there?
I was promised an interview with him, and I was going to do a mini documentary desperately seeking Yahya Saleh. And finally, he posted pictures himself online of him on vacation in Havana. And Saleh's son runs the Republican Guard, the premier U.S.-trained unit. Other relatives control the intelligence apparatus, the Air Force. I mean, they're in firm control.
Well, aren't they all trained and funded by the United States, the Central Security Forces Counterterrorism Unit and the military in general?
There are two primary units, the Counterterrorism Unit, which was set up in 2006 and then dramatically beefed up under Obama. Which
is that kind of like the ISI? I hate to be analogous.
No, it's not like the ISI. It's sort of like intended to be a combination between the CIA and the FBI. The Republican Guard, which in Iran or in Iraq when there was a Republican Guard, those were the special forces. They also serve as an intelligence force, and it's run by Saleh's son. But the counterterrorism units, I have to say, with all the hoopla about them in celebration of them as this elite unit, for the most part, they didn't fight al-Qaeda at all. They were defending the regime. They really ripped off the U.S. with that one, and it's pretty scandalous if you look at the details on it.
They're supposed to be fighting al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, often referred to as what, ACAP?
AQAP is the way. So Europeans call it ACAP.
So you say that they're not really doing very much?
No, I mean, you know, let's just put some sort of statistics out there. There's about 700 to 1,000 core members of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. It's not some massive organization. Most of them are Yemenis, and most of them are inwardly focused on their own country. They do have some jihadists with external aspirations. The underwear bomber emanated from Yemen, the famed cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, who was a U.S. citizen that was killed late last year in a strike authorized by President Obama, was a prominent advocate of external jihad. But for the most part, these are guys that are focused internally in Yemen.
You've written about another group, Ansar al-Sharia. Some people say it's just al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula rebranding itself as supporters of Sharia. Is that your sense, that they just did that to make themselves sound less threatening?
I think at the beginning it was a crude attempt at rebranding. But what we've seen happen is that al-Qaeda has sort of flattened itself out, its message out in Yemen, and has steered away from calling for the overthrow of the U.S. government and attacks against America, and is focused more almost in a Taliban-style way on providing services and filling the gaps left by the vacuum of the corrupt Saleh regime.
So they've become popular with the local populace.
Yeah, they've become popular for two main reasons.
The same way Hamas became popular.
Yeah, although they're less legitimate, I would say, than Hamas, and rely much more on an uneducated populace that's just angry and is unemployed and in poverty. But the U.S. airstrikes have also contributed to a rise in the popularity of a sort of Salafist message, an anti-modernist message.
So do militant groups control much of Yemen?
They control much of Abyan province, which is this huge province in the south that borders one of the major important cities, Aden, which is right on the Arabian Sea and is where the USS Cole was bombed in 2000. They're in control of a lot more territory in Yemen today than they ever have been in history.
My guest is Jeremy Scahill, who is the national security reporter for The Nation, and his article on the situation in Yemen in The Nation is called Washington's War in Yemen Backfires. We have a link to it on our show page. It backfires because, you give two reasons. One is that Saleh used the fear of terrorism to get U.S. support, even though he wasn't always really fighting terrorists. And so it backfires in terms of a lot of money being misspent. But also, as you suggest, it has alienated a lot of the people in Yemen?
Right. In 2001, Saleh was one of the first Arab leaders, if not the first Arab leader, to come to Washington and say, "We're with you, not with the terrorists." And he sort of convinced the Bush administration he was on the U.S. side. And the U.S. made terrorism and fighting terrorism a source of profit for the regime. So Saleh started doing things like allowing al-Qaeda militants to break out of prisons, allowing weapons to fall into their hands, strategically allowing them to take over cities so that he could come to the Americans and say, "There's a real threat here." But the thing that really has changed from Bush to Obama is that President Obama has started authorizing airstrikes, not just with drones, but with Tomahawk cruise missiles launched from submarines in the Arabian Sea. And in some cases, they hit the intended target. I mean, Obama has been bumping people off left and right from all these al-Qaeda nodes. But one of the biggest massacres, as it's referred to in Yemen, occurred in the first strike Obama authorized in December of 2009, and it killed over 40 people that we now know are Bedouins. They were a very poor tribe in the south of Yemen. People, Leonard, when I was there, still are talking about that and saying, "Why are you Americans focused on al-Awlaki? It's just because he's your citizen. What about the 44 people that were killed in El Majla village? Who's going to do anything about them? When's the ACLU going to represent them in a lawsuit?"
So they're sophisticated about American politics?
Everyone knows the ACLU and the Center for Constitutional Rights because of Anwar al-Awlaki. And I mean, you know, one tribal leader said to me, and I had sympathy for this. He said, "Look, Americans got compensation from Libya for the Lockerbie bombing. Where's our compensation for these bombings?"
Are these done with congressional authorization?
That's a very interesting question. When it's the CIA, the Intelligence Committee by law is supposed to be briefed. When it's the military, though, you know, the Obama and Bush administrations both have blurred the lines and given a lot of latitude to commanders on the ground. So there's a very complicated explanation, and then there's the simple explanation, which is that there's a huge gray area that sort of permeates the world of military operations that makes congressional oversight very limited and ineffective when it comes to military operations conducted by special operations forces.
So is that why President Obama has used JSOC so much?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. The Bin Laden raid was a JSOC operation, but put under the command of CIA so that there would be legal mechanisms to defend the strike against Bin Laden. In many cases in Yemen, including the strike that killed Anwar al-Awlaki's 16-year-old son 2 weeks after al-Awlaki was killed. That was not a CIA operation, as I understand it. That was a military operation based on actionable intelligence from the field. They thought someone was with him, and it turned out that he wasn't. That was an al-Qaeda guy, and they ended up killing this 16-year-old American citizen.
Last week, Time magazine asked Gerald M. Feierstein, the U.S. ambassador to Yemen, if the political upheaval in the Middle East will change U.S. counterterrorism strategy. He said, I would say that we would continue along the lines that we've been pursuing. So that means the drone strikes will continue.
The U.S. ambassador in Yemen is widely despised in Yemen. People refer to him as a thug. He's a very, very hawkish guy who has been very public in his support for a militarization of U.S. counterterrorism policy. People were burning an effigy of him.
They call him Sheikh Feierstein.
Right. But people were literally burning an effigy of the U.S. ambassador. That's never happened in Yemen before, just a few days ago.
On the other hand, at President Hadi's swearing-in ceremony, former President Saleh emphasized that international partners, to use his phrase, must continue to aid Yemen's fight against terrorism, especially al-Qaeda. So is Hadi likely to continue Saleh's policies?
Well, part of this is sort of dog whistling. I mean, Saleh is a master at playing the Americans. We make a mistake when we get in the room with a lot of foreign leaders of thinking that we're necessarily smarter than them about their own country. And Saleh is sort of laying the groundwork for a continuation of these policies because Hadi's his ally and he wants to make sure that the spigot doesn't get turned off.
But he has to worry about the spigot because Yemen is facing a population explosion with dwindling supplies of water, depleted oil reserves. They are dependent on foreign aid. And who has the money but the United States?
Right. And if you look at, well, the Saudis give way more
to
Yemen.
But
the Saudis
also were supporting Saleh as well.
Absolutely.
They?
Oh, and will continue to be deeply involved there. I mean, if you look at it, for years, the U.S. was giving a tremendous amount more in military aid to Yemen than civilian infrastructure support. Now it's about $300 million to the military, $300 million for civilian projects and aid projects. It's a pittance, though, when you look at other countries the U.S. supports. Yemen's the poorest country in the Arab world, and that's saying a lot. It's an extremely devastated place with street children everywhere, Somali refugees washing cars in the streets. I mean, it's a very sad place.
What about the architecture?
Is that gorgeous?
It is gorgeous.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's...
This is not a place that's falling down.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's part of the falling down is the beauty of the place. They've done a really good job of preserving structures that far, far predate European and U.S. civilizations.
Although you've also written about a new stadium that was built to attract foreign games, and the thing has been pretty much bombed out.
Right. I was one of the few journalists that got into Abyan province, where al-Qaeda is arguably its strongest in Yemen. And there was a stadium that was built in 2010 for this soccer tournament. And it was called the Unity Stadium. And it was meant to be launch a hearts and minds campaign against al-Qaeda. And when I saw it, it had been shelled by the military. Al-Qaeda had taken it over. And it was just a festering symbol of how not in control the Yemeni government was of that area.
You write that, I'm quoting, the key to accomplishing anything in Yemen is navigating its labyrinthine tribal system. But we still haven't mastered the tribal system in Afghanistan, have we?
No, and we don't master the tribal system anywhere. And you know, anywhere where we find ourselves, whether it's tribes in Somalia, clans in Somalia, tribes in Afghanistan, tribes in Yemen, no. And the fact is that we believe that democracy is sort of this perfect way of governance. And for a lot of countries around the world, it just isn't. And I think that we're clashing up against hundreds and hundreds of years of civilization and order and trying to shove it by violence down the throats of people, and they're not taking it. And that's part of the problem. We're too arrogant in these places.
Well, but we are trying to buy stability.
Yeah.
Although a lot of the money winds up in the wrong hands.
Well, look, in Iraq, where we paid people not to shoot at us. We have these awakening councils. And it's similar to what the U.S. is doing in Somalia right now, trying to essentially purchase warlords away from fighting.
Well, we've talked about withdrawing from Iraq and then Afghanistan, although it's unclear just what that means. What about Yemen? Is the United States likely to be there for a long time?
Yeah, because it's a small footprint on the ground. I think Yemen and Pakistan represent the future of the American war strategy, where we are going to have special operations forces, targeted killings, drones, and occasional missile strikes in favor of large military deployments. I think that's the big difference between Obama and the Republicans. Obama is a special operations president. The Republicans believe in the myth that we can occupy these countries.
Well, Obama has said that he wants to disengage in the Middle East and refocus in in Asia.
If you read between the
Pacific.
Lines. Yeah. Well, and there was recently a U.S.-backed airstrike in the Philippines targeting members of an Islamist militant movement there, killing a number of senior leaders. You know, the U.S. has a fairly large focus on Indonesia, on the Philippines. I think Obama is trying to shift the focus. But let's be clear about it. Even if he pulls out all the troops from Afghanistan, it is still going to be a special operations night raid war.
Jeremy Scahill is the national security reporter for The Nation. His article, Washington's War in Yemen Backfires, can be found on our show page where we have a link. Thank you so much for being on a Backstory segment today.
Thank you, and good luck with the fundraising drive.